paused, and then it hit me. My knife. Or the knife I had on me when I woke up. I'd never seen it before, and I had no idea how it got in my pocket, but I wanted it back. I dove into his sweatshirt, pulled out the knife, and backed away, unsheathing it again as I looked around me. The other guys chuckled under their breaths. "Did you bring me here?" I yelled at Will. How long had he been here? But I didn't expect an answer. I just screamed, "Let me out!" I sucked in air, the small space, the darkness, and no place to run making my blood chill. I choked back my sob. I knew he couldn't be trusted. I told him that. I knew it. "I hate you," I said. This had everything to do with him. Taylor jumped off the crates and came at me, and I lunged for him, only to have someone from behind grab my wrist. I whipped around, swiping the blade, and Micah stumbled backward, hissing. Blood dripped from his arm, and I backed away, holding the knife and keeping them in front of me.
"Fuck," Micah cursed. "I told you to let her die out there,"
Rory bit out, taking Micah's arm and elevating it as it bled.
"Let me out of here,"
I screamed again. But then all of them looked up, staring behind me as they stopped in their tracks. I straightened my spine. What? But I didn't have time to wonder. Someone grabbed my hand with the knife, squeezing it as he fisted my throat with his other hand. I gasped, crying out as I dropped the knife to the floor. He turned me around, still clutching my neck, and I tipped my head back, looking up and seeing golden brown hair, slicked back, and high cheekbones framing amber eyes. Young, but older than the rest of them. Maybe Will's age. His lips curled at the corner, and my heart pounded so hard it hurt as I took in the broad shoulders, the 5 o'clock shadow, and the vein bulging in his neck.
"I would think they'd have a separate facility for the young women," he joked, letting his eyes fall down my body. "Are they trying to make sure we keep misbehaving?"
Snorts went off behind me, and I planted my hands on his chest, trying to push him away as I heard a scrape on the ground, probably someone picking up my knife. My hair hung in my face, over my glasses, and I was so thirsty. He released me and I darted backward, putting distance between me and every one of them.
"Forgive me," he said. "Just a joke."
He walked around me, stopping at Micah Moreau and lifting the guy's arm, inspecting it. I flashed my gaze to Will, but he just stared down, absently scraping the blood out from under his nails with my knife, as if I weren't here.
"It'll be okay."
I looked back at the guy talking to Micah, seeing him raise his arm back up to stop the flow of blood.
"Just keep it clean."
Who was this guy? Was he the one in charge? I scanned his clothes, seeing a smooth-looking white Oxford, perfectly pressed and tucked into some black dress slacks with a shiny leather belt. He wore black leather shoes, and everything fit him perfectly, as if it were tailored especially for him. A little better dressed than the other guys, but he did say we. "Are they trying to make sure we keep misbehaving?" he'd said. He was a prisoner, too. He was the alpha Will spoke of. Micah nodded at him before tossing me a scowl, and the alpha came back, regarding me.
"My apologies for them."
He pressed a hand to his chest, coming in,
"sincerely."
But I shoved him back before he got any closer, his pressed white shirt now smudged with my dirt.
"Get away from me!"
And then I looked to Will.
"Will!"
I barked. He just stood there, his gaze rising to meet mine without a care in the world.
"Will?"
Jesus, snap out of it. To hell with this. I ran for the stairs, jiggling the double doors to get out.
"I wouldn't try that,"
the alpha said.
"It's cold. I'm guessing you don't know how to hunt. And believe me when I say you can walk a day in every direction and see nothing but your own footprints when you finally give up and drag your freezing ass back here because you have no other choices."
I growled, pushing and slamming my body into the doors. But all I could hear were chains on the other side, holding it secure.
"Give it back to her," I heard him say behind me.
I looked over my shoulder, seeing him speak to Rory, who now held my knife, turning it over in his hands and inspecting it. He narrowed his eyes.
"She sliced Micah," he argued.
The alpha stepped up to him, looked down into his eyes, and didn't say another word. Rory tightened his lips and stalked over, tossing me the knife. now sheathed. I caught it, stepping down off the stairs and holding it firmly in my fist.
"I'm Aiden," the Alpha said, looking at me. "Aiden Kadir. No one will touch you again. You have my word."
"Your word?" I almost laughed. "Does that mean anything, when all I know about you is that you were despicable enough to get locked up in here?" He quirked a smile, walking over to a small steel door on the wall and opening it. Flames burst inside, and he reached down, taking a couple of logs and tossing them inside the oven.
"You may know me," he retorted, taking the poker and churning the wood. "My family probably owns one of the many sweatshops in Vietnam where your cheap Target blouse was manufactured."
Taylor laughed, and I steeled my spine. I watched as Aiden unwrapped a cut of meat from the same white butcher paper I saw on lots of the fair inside the refrigerator upstairs. Picking it up with his fingers, he slapped it on a metal tray and slid it into the brick oven. I flinched as the flames engulfed it, the oven looking deep enough to hold a whole damn person. I tensed.
"No one will touch you," he said,
staring at the flames before turning to look at me.
"Until you want us to."
Snickers filled the room, and I licked my lips, unnerved. "Why am I here?" I demanded. But he just taunted me.
"Right?" he said. "Why are any of us here? We're all innocent."
Rory and Micah laughed, and I inched forward, the knife clasped in my hand. "I'm not a prisoner," I told him. "I don't come from wealth. All I remember is leaving my office in San Francisco for lunch and waking up here. Where are we?" Aiden just stared at the flames, the light dancing across his face.
"She knows Will," Taylor said. "Does she?"
Aiden looked over his shoulder at Will.
"Is she family? Please say it isn't so."
Will hung back, his hands in his pocket again, as he leaned into the crates. The fire reflected in his gaze as he stared at me. "Will?" I pleaded. But he remained quiet.
"He doesn't seem to know you," Aiden teased.
I shook my head. "There must be some way to get a hold of security, or the people who run this place, or..." Aiden pulled out the steak, sizzling on the tray, and set it on the wooden table, grabbing a knife and fork and cutting the meat.
"We have a kitchen, of course, but the meat is so much better cooked down here."
He looked at me, bidding me over.
"You must be hungry. We're not completely uncivilized. Come here."
He took a pitcher and poured a glass of water, and my mouth dried even more, seeing how good it looked.
"Your name?"
he asked, pushing the glass and pan toward me. I clamped my mouth shut. But Will spoke up for me.
"Her name is Emery Scott,"
he answered. I shot Will a glare. A smirk danced across his eyes.
"From Thunder Bay as well?"
Aiden asked him, and Will nodded. Taylor took back his spot, sitting on the crates behind him and hanging over Will's shoulder again as everyone watched me. I stepped a little closer to Will, too angry to care right now. "Always following," I taunted him, "never the leader, and always latching on to anyone who loves you." He stared at me. "Your friends have moved on," I told him, "buying up Thunder Bay, starting families, probably happy to be rid of their weakest link." My eyes burned on him. Even Damon seems happy, judging from the news I catch from home. No falter in his steps, as he does just fine without you. The muscles in his jaw flexed, and I smiled a little. Yeah, he didn't like that.
"Damon?"
Aiden murmured, looking over to Will.
"Torrance?"
Will remained silent.
"And Michael Crist and Kai Mori, right?"
Aiden continued.
"I would be jealous you have people who care enough to send help if it weren't a female a year too late."
Everyone chuckled. "No one sent me. Someone kidnapped me."
"Took them long enough," Taylor added. "And we've been here the whole time, taking care of him. He's ours now,"
Aiden told me.
"The senator's grandson has elevated his company, my dear. We're not toys playing at war."
"No, you're prisoners playing like you have any power." He nodded once, unfazed.
"We'll revisit that topic again another time. Eat."
The food sat there, the smell permeating the air, and I saw Micah staring at it more than once. Aiden dug into his steak, taking a bite. Where was their food? I looked at Will, but he just stared at me. "I'm not staying here for a month," I said. Iden continued eating and took a drink of water, washing it down.
Things happen fast in the wild, he said, cutting another chunk. Hunting, fishing, hiking, remote as we are, a simple injury can mean death.
He raised his eyes to me.
A simple injury can leave you in a lot of pain.
He chewed his food and then pushed his plate away, swallowing.
Micah had an anxiety attack when he first arrived, he explained, looking at the guy. Remember that? We had to put him down here for a whole day, because his hysteria was driving us insane.
I shot my eyes to Micah, his gaze on the floor now. They locked him in here because he had a panic attack? He could have died. I begged Will with my eyes, but he wasn't looking at me anymore. He wasn't looking at anything anymore, staring at the floor, same as Micah.
I'd hate for that to happen to you at the wrong time,
Iden said, approaching me.
When the crews show up again, you could be down here in the tunnels, undetected until they came again the next month.
My heart sank to my stomach, and while I had no clue why the rest of them were locked up in here, I had a very good idea about what made him such a threat. He stepped up to me, and now the guys behind him weren't laughing so much anymore.
You'll stay with us, Iden whispered. We'll take care of you until they arrive.
I looked up at him, the dark brown in his amber eyes sharpening with the threat. I want to see Will alone, I said, trying to keep my tone calm. Iden looked over at Will.
Is there anything you can hear that we can't?
Will's eyes darted from me to him, hesitating a moment before replying,
No.
Iden turned, smirking, and I knew. I knew. I couldn't stay here. There was a town nearby. If I had to walk for 3 days until my body nearly expired from dehydration, I'd find it. Slowly, I circled around Iden, backing up and keeping my eyes on the boys as I made my way toward the door. You want some fun? I asked Taylor. 5 minute head start, then. He grinned wide, looking to Iden and then back to me.
Two, he cooed.
He hopped off the crates, Will, Rory, and Micah turning to face me as Iden stood in the back, waiting. And then? I launched for the door, swinging it open and racing through, charging up the old stone stairs and through the door at the top. They howled behind me, lighting a fire under my feet, and I swung around, not knowing where the front door to the house was from here. But I saw the kitchen and ran for it. Swinging around the large island, I bolted for the back door and charged through, leaping onto the grass, immediately stumbling to my knees and rolling down the small wet hill, darkness looming everywhere. Ice seeped through my skin. He was right. It was cold. Scrambling to my feet, I dug in my heels and ran. I ran and ran, not risking a look back as I made for the cover of the trees ahead. Gasping for breath, I glanced to my left, seeing a huge-ass waterfall gushing over a cliff. I slowed, widening my eyes as it rose high above and the balconies of the house overlooked it. My God, I kept running, not believing what I was seeing. Where the hell was I? The waterfall spilled into a ravine I couldn't see. But I just shook my head and ran so hard, my body screamed. Diving into the darkened woods, I raced through the brush. I wished I wasn't wearing a white shirt. I rounded trees, deciding to stay close to the edge of the forest, where the land spilled off to the side. Good chance there was a river below that carried the water from the fall. And where there was water, there were towns. Stumbling over rocks as branches whipped at my arms, I barely even bothered to look ahead as I pushed my glasses back up the bridge of my nose, the knife still in my hand as I struggled for air. It was fucking cold. Where were we? It was only mid-October. There was a waterfall in their backyard and trees that didn't belong anywhere I'd ever lived. Canada? There were hemlocks, spruces, white pines. These trees were partial to the northeastern part of North America. I had been part of a design team right out of college that renovated an old house in St. John. The owner was adamant about reintroducing native flora to the property. God, how did I get here? Hollers went off behind me, hitting the air, and I whimpered. They were coming. I dug in harder, sweat coating my back despite the cold as their howls got closer and closer, and I could almost feel their hands on me as I raced. I hit the ground, scurrying behind a bush to hide myself. I couldn't stop gasping for breath, my heart about to beat out of my chest. I wasn't going to make it, outrunning them. I'd hide until they gave up, and then I'd make a run for it. Leaves rustled and footfalls pounded past. I didn't see them through the bush, but I could hear them. They ran, their steps fading away, and I stayed rooted in my spot.
Emery, they called,
but their voices were nowhere near me. I smiled.
Emery,
they sang. And still, their voices sank farther and farther away. Slowly, I slipped the knife into my pocket, got my feet under me, and rose enough to look over the edge of the bush, just to sneak a glance at their position. I didn't see anyone. Yes, I'd hide here, or somewhere else if I had to, and make my escape when they were gone. The grounds were huge. They couldn't cover every inch. I was getting out of here, rain or shine. I squatted back down to maintain my hiding place, but then I caught sight of Micah, racing right for me.
Boo!
He shouted. I screamed and lost my balance, flailing my arms and flying backward. I rolled down the small incline and grappled at the ground to stop myself, but I just kept slipping. Shit! I cried out, my legs falling over the edge of something, and I tumbled over the side of the cliff, a hand grabbing my wrist just in time. I kicked and looked down, seeing the river far below as I swung my other hand up, grasping for whoever had me.
Rory!
Micah shouted, sliding on his ass with me as he held on.
Taylor!
I whimpered, feeling a slide. He was coming with me. He couldn't hold on. I hung there as they held on to me, knowing they could let go at any moment. And not so sure anymore that I'd rather risk starvation or dying of exposure out in the wilderness. Don't let me go. Taylor, Will, and Iden slid down the hill behind them and came to stand over the three of us. Iden looked as calm as he did inside the house, like he didn't even have to break a sweat to come out here after me. He cocked his head, watching me dangle there.
Put her in my room, he told them.
Chapter 4 Emery. 9 years ago. What did you do in lit class yesterday? Elle Burkhart pulled on her uniform trousers, staring at me while I pulled off my necktie and started unbuttoning my shirt. My long-sleeved white t-shirt, underneath, remained on as I snatched my band jacket off the hanger dangling on the outside of my locker. The girls' locker room was packed, cheerleading, band, and the field hockey team all vying for space. Either trying to get out to the court or go home. I finished reading Lolita, I mumbled to her. You know what I mean. I shot her a look. I'd skipped lit this morning, no doubt another confrontation with my brother waiting to happen tonight once he found out. But I just couldn't face Will and his merry band of morons this morning after my outburst yesterday. I'd hid in the library instead. Let them do their worst while they can, I said, pulling on my coat, the heavy fabric grazing my back and burning the skin. Life will eventually knock them down to size, like it does to us all. It wasn't that I was scared of the horsemen and the repercussions of calling them out in class yesterday. I just knew another outburst from me couldn't happen again quite yet. So rather than give them the satisfaction of seeing me shut up and sit there, I just didn't show up at all. Gathering all of my hair, I pulled it into a low ponytail and picked up my glasses off the bench, slipping them back on. The poster across the locker room came into view more clearly. Vote for Ari, homecoming queen. Homecoming? I groaned. Pretty sure slamming my nipple in a car door would be less painful. Or joining a gym. Or reading the bell jar in between bouts of banging my head on a wall. Elle reached into her locker and took out her deodorant, rolling it on. You're coming to sticks tonight, right? Kicking off my sneakers, I pulled my newly pressed pants off the hanger and slipped them on before unzipping my skirt and letting it fall to the floor. What do you think? Too school for cool? I nodded, slipping my pants on and fastening them. The girl knew me. Leaning over, I jerked my chin at her and opened her locker door, gesturing to the Trojan bumper sticker she had plastered inside. Some of us don't have parents with the admissions office at USC on speed dial. We buttoned up our navy blue and white coats, but I could feel her eyes on me as she braided her blonde hair and I slipped on my black shoes. You're allowed to relax once in a while. Her voice was calm but firm. The rest of us aren't less because we like to have fun, you know? Depends on your idea of fun, I guess. I sat down and started tying my shoes, but then I saw her stop, and I paused, realizing how that came out. I looked up at her, kind of wincing. I'm sorry, I said. I didn't mean that. Damn, I was rude. Why was I so awful? Elle and I weren't friends, but we were friendly. She tried, despite how hard I made it. And I have fun, I teased. Who says I don't have fun? She continued braiding her hair. Depends on your idea of fun, I guess, she shot back. I laughed, thankful she was playing back. I knew how I was, judgy, rude, and close-minded. But I also knew why. I was jealous. Happy people didn't hurt others. And while I didn't dwell on my behavior in Lit yesterday with Will and his friends, people like Elle didn't deserve it. I wanted someone to understand me. Have you ever seen a Lamborghini commercial on TV? I asked, looking over and meeting her eyes. She shook her head. They don't make them, I told her, because people who can afford Lamborghinis aren't sitting around watching television. So you want a Lamborghini someday, and that's why you work so hard and don't have any fun? No, I chuckled, gathering my school uniform scattered on the floor. My own private jet will get me out of this town a hell of a lot faster than a car. I'll wave goodbye and let it all disappear in my wake. The cheer team ran by our aisle, everyone starting to make their way out to the gym. The football team was on a bye week, but the basketball team had an exhibition game against Falcons Well. I'll try not to take that remark personally, Elle replied. I shot her a smile, hoping she didn't take it personally. I wanted as far away from this town as possible for several reasons, and once I left, only one thing would ever bring me back. Is there nothing you love in Thunder Bay? She asked. I dropped my eyes for a moment and then looked over at her. Why do you think I'm still here? And then I opened my locker and flashed her the inside of my door. But instead of my own Trojan bumper sticker or any bumper sticker, it was a single 3x5 snapshot of my grandma and me at my 11th birthday picnic in the park. My skin in my blue tank top was darker than my usual olive from all my time in the sun that summer. My cheeks rosy from smiling and not having a care in the world other than what I was going to do for fun the next day. And no matter what size glasses I wore, they always looked too big for my face. I was geeky and happy, and remembering that woman in the picture resembled nothing like the woman who was lying in bed at home right now made my throat prickle with tears. But I looked at Elle and smiled small. My grandma, the one thing I'd come back to town for. In fact, the idea of leaving for college and leaving her, if she was still alive by then, was almost unbearable. I rubbed my eyes under my glasses and then stuffed my school clothes into the locker. I looked up, noticing something. What was that? I narrowed my eyes, reaching up and taking the stuffed animal off the top shelf. I paused in confusion. How did this get in here? I looked around for anyone watching me and met Elle's eyes, holding it up. Did you put this in here? She looked at it and then me, shaking her head. Nope, I don't even know what that is. A Komodo dragon? I studied the gray plush toy, taking in his claws, teeth, tail, the scales down his spine, the angry snarl on his face. It's Godzilla, I murmured, and then laughed. Who put this in here? And then my face fell. I watched Godzilla last night. I thought I was alone in the theater. Did someone see me? It was coincidental, wasn't it? What's this? Elle picked up the paper and granola bar tied to its leg. She read the note. Sunset is at 6:38 p.m. I flashed my gaze to hers. She shrugged. It's from someone who knows it's Yom Kippur, she said. In a town like this, everyone knew who the Jewish kids were. And the black kids. And the poor kids. We were in the minority in Thunder Bay. So we stood out. Anyone could have sent this, and I was tempted to keep the snack bar. I hadn't checked what time sunset was to know when I could eat, and I'd forgotten to bring anything for after the game. I was hungry. But then I saw a black strip of cardstock tied to Godzilla's tail and ripped it off with the ribbon. Admit 1, Emery Scott, L-348. My hand shook as I read it over and over again, recognizing the black paper with the ornate silver border and the serial number identifying every ticket sold. It was an annual event. It was...
Are you serious?
Elle blurted out, snatching the ticket from my hand and staring at it. An invitation from a senior? I opened my mouth to speak, but no words came out. The senior lock-in was held every October, and it was tonight. After the basketball game, non-seniors could attend only if they secured an invitation from the graduating class, and even then, the seniors were only allowed to invite one person each. One senior used their only pass to invite me? It had to be a mistake. Take it, I told her. There was no way I was going. This was a trap waiting to happen. She held it for a moment and then sighed, handing it back to me. As tempting as it is, you need this more than me. I crumpled it in my fist, about to toss it onto the floor of my locker, but Elle plucked it out of my hand and stuck it inside my jacket, slipping it in between two buttons.
Line up, our director called.
But I was swatting Elle's hand away. Stop, damn it, I gritted out. I'm not going. In case you change your mind, she chirped. But then she dropped her voice to a whisper. I mean, what's to worry about? It's not like you're really locked in with them. Them. She meant the seniors. But when she said it, only 4 came to mind. I side-eyed her, tossed Godzilla into my locker, and pulled out my flute.
He's so cute, Elle said,
but it came out in a little growl like he was a baby and good enough to eat. I chuckled under my breath. I wasn't sure which one she was talking about, but I could guess. Will Grayson jogged down the court, dribbled the ball, and passed it to the center before racing ahead again, catching it, and shooting it straight into the basket. It slipped through the net. The scoreboard added 2 points, and the crowd cheered. Michael Crist shot him a 5 and charged down the court, sliding in front of the other team's forward and stealing the ball again, passing it to Kai.
Woo!
Everyone screamed around me. I wiped the sweat off my forehead, watching Will lift his shirt up and use it to do the same. I couldn't help my eyes falling to his bare stomach, the shorts making his skin look more golden, with the ridges and dips tight and visible from here. Heat covered my face again, and I looked away. Navy blue was absolutely his color. I tried to space off like I did with the football games, but even when I wasn't looking at the court, I wanted to look at it. Will Grayson was the best shooter we'd ever had, better than Crist, who was already in talks for an athletic scholarship he didn't need for college next year. Why wasn't Will vying for one? How lucky it must be to have a talent like that to get you in the door, but then again, he didn't need help opening doors, did he? He was probably a legacy somewhere, his future already planned. The final buzzer blared, and I checked the scoreboard, making sure of what I already knew. We won. By a lot. Too bad it wasn't a real game. Just a little show before the regular season started in November. Hesitantly, I raised my eyes again, finding him on the court. He talked to Damon Torrance as he wiped the sweat off his face, the wet hair at the back of his neck darker than the hair on top. Then he looked over his shoulder and locked eyes with me. A smile spread across his face, like he knew I'd been watching him the whole damn time, and my face fell, heat rising to my cheeks. Ugh. I looked away. Such an ass. Everyone descended the bleachers, the crowd dispersing, and I looked up at the clock, seeing it was just after 7. The hunger pangs had stopped, but my mouth watered for that granola bar, and now I could eat. I wasn't stupid enough to eat food from someone I didn't know, though. Hopefully, Martin left me alone so I could get some food in me before he went to town. Scott! Someone called. I looked up to see Mrs. Baum, the director. I slipped through the crowd of students, walking over to her. She leaned in. Change and put your instrument away, she told me quietly, and then hurry back into the gym to help clean up the mess before the lock-in. Yes, ma'am. I was grateful she didn't shout that across the room. No one needed reminding that I was a work-study kid. Heading for the locker room, I passed Elle as she talked to two of our band members. "Have fun tonight," I told her. She smiled. "Better hurry and make it out in time before they lock the doors." And then she wiggled her eyebrows. "They don't actually lock the doors," I retorted. "It's a fire hazard." She stuck her tongue out playfully, and I smiled, spinning around and heading for the locker room. After changing back into my school clothes, I hung my band uniform back up, stored my instrument in my locker, and started to close the door, stopping when I spotted the granola bar. I twisted my lips to the side, slipping it off the red ribbon around Godzilla's foot, and checking it for holes like I used to do with Halloween candy. It looked safe. My stomach hollowed, and suddenly, I was hungry again. I stuffed it into the center pocket of my black hoodie. I'll throw it away in the gym. Slamming the locker door shut, I started walking, but looked down and saw the crumpled ticket on the floor. Crouching down, I picked it up and looked at it again. Must have fallen out of my uniform. For a moment, I was tempted. I wanted to be that girl, the one with a lock-in and cute boys and music and friends to look forward to. The longing coursed through me, and eventually out, and I stuffed it into my hoodie pocket as well. I'd throw that away with the granola bar, too, definitely before Martin saw it. I hurried back to the gym. "Okay, one," Bentley Foster called out. "Two, three." An hour later, the gym was clean of soda cups and popcorn boxes, the bleachers stored, the hoops raised, and the floors quickly swept. Two of us each picked up the ends of several mats, and on the count of three, pulled them open, spreading the hardwood basketball court with a cushion for sleeping bags and blankets. In no time, the floor was covered in blue wrestling mats, and my stomach ached at the smell of burgers and nachos wafting in from the kitchen. I checked the clock in the wall. After 8. Looking over, I caught the director's eyes. "Are we good?" I asked her. "You walking?" I nodded. "Then go on and go," she told me. "Have a good weekend. Be safe." "Thanks." I backed away as I rolled the coolers full of soda and juice out. "You too." I jogged toward the locker room door to collect my uniform and backpack when I heard her behind me. "Open the doors," she called to someone. Students had no doubt gathered outside, having packed and stored their sleeping bags in their cars since this morning, probably leaving after the game to eat before they came right back here for the lock-in. I pushed through the locker room door as the main entrances swung open, letting in the crowd. "Scott!" Baum shouted. I stopped, turning around. She still stood where I left her, muttering into a walkie-talkie and then turning her attention back to me. "Coach Dorn is up in her classroom," she said. "She wants to see you before you leave." I hesitated a moment and then sighed. "Okay," I called out and spun back around, pushing through the door with a hard shove. I needed to get out of here. It was dark, I was starving, and they didn't really lock the doors during a lock-in, right? I mean, I was pretty sure that was illegal, but now I didn't know. Skipping the stop at my locker, I exited the locker room, swung open the door, and stepped into the hallway, slipping through the students who were trying to get into the gym. I turned left and jogged up the darkened stairs, their footsteps and chatter fading the farther up I climbed. Mrs. Dorn was not only the swim coach, but she also taught biology on the third floor. I took biology 2 years ago, though. What did she want? Was this about me quitting swimming? Fear cooled my blood. She knew something didn't sit right about why I'd quit. I could see it on her face. Reaching the top floor, I grabbed the door handle and pulled it open, entering the silent third floor and looking around. No lights shone except for the lanterns that glowed outside, and tiny droplets of rain spattered the windows that peered into the courtyard below. Great. Now I was going to get soaked walking home. The door closed behind me, and suddenly the lock-in was miles away. "Coach," I called out, walking down the hall toward her classroom. Heading up to the door, I stopped and peered inside. Stools sat upside down on top of the long black work tables, and I looked to the teacher's desk, seeing her computer off, her chair pushed in, and the classroom pitch black. "Coach," I said louder this time, "it's Emery Scott." Stepping back into the hallway, I turned, looking around. "Hello?" But there was no answer. I dug in my heels, charging down the hall and glancing into classrooms as I passed, all dark and not a soul to be found. Everyone was either home or downstairs on the first floor. I rounded the corner and then the next, coming up on the teacher's lounge, and found the door cracked. Creeping up, I pushed it open a sliver more. "Hello?" I said. "Coach, are you in here?" Every hair on my arms stood on end, and all I could see was dark. What the hell? Then, a shadow suddenly moved across the wall in my view, and I sucked in a breath. I swallowed. "Coach?" I choked out. Rain tapped the windows behind me, and I knew someone was in the room. I almost pushed the door open, but whoever was in there heard me, and they weren't responding. To hell with this, I tried. She could talk to me Monday. Jetting off, I ran to the end of the hall and threw my body into the door leading to the other stairwell. But it didn't budge. I grabbed hold of the bar and shoved again, the door jiggling but not opening. "No, no, no!" I pushed again and then tried the other one, kicking at it and growling. "They don't really lock the doors," I mocked myself. "Shit!" Running back the way I came, I bolted past the teacher's lounge and whoever might be in there, heading back toward the lab, passing it, and trying the doors I came through when I arrived. I shook the handles, yanking and shoving, but they wouldn't open. Damn it, did they lock behind me automatically, or... I shook my head, not wanting to think about the other option. I slipped my hands inside the pocket of my hoodie, but when I pulled out the items inside, all I had were the granola bar and the lock-in ticket. Where's my phone? I breathed hard, my hair tickling my nose as I searched my brain. My locker. I'd left my phone and my backpack inside my locker. I couldn't call home anyway. Not yet. Martin was a last resort. I could call the office. Or Elle. I closed my eyes. Shit. I didn't even know her number. I didn't know anyone's number. A friend would be useful right now, loser. There had to be a speed dial on a classroom telephone for the front office. Please, please, please let someone be in there. I rushed back to the biology lab and swung inside the door, grabbing the receiver off the wall and squinting at the keypad. I couldn't see shit. I flipped the light switch. But nothing happened. What? I breathed out, confused. I flipped the switch up and down a few more times, looking up at the lights and hoping for a flicker, but they were dead. The room was black. I gritted my teeth and clenched my thighs because I felt like I was about to pee my pants. I pushed my glasses back up my nose and squinted at the keypad again, trying to make out the writing. Before I could dial, something glinted to my left, and I looked down on the floor, seeing a large wet footprint. I stopped breathing, following the trail, but it disappeared out the door and into the hallway. Whipping around, I dropped the phone, seeing the window on the other side of the room open with rain pouring across the roof outside, splattering the windowsill. I was just in here, looking for Dorn. That window wasn't open. I dropped the phone and backed into the hallway, keeping my eyes peeled. "This isn't funny," I barked, "and I'm not scared." Twisting my head left and right, I continued retreating to the wall of windows that wrapped around the third level, glancing over my shoulder to see if I could signal anyone outside in the courtyard. There was no one, though, just dark and rain and trees below. So the lights were cut off. The doors were suddenly locked. Someone creepy was playing around, probably the same creep who sent me the invite to the lock-in. Fucking Will Grayson. I squared my shoulder, looking left and then right. "How flattered I am that you have nothing better to do with your time than this," I bit out. "Come on, I'm almost excited. Let's go." This was bullshit. I had things to do. I had to get home. But no, everyone was at their disposal for their entertainment. No one else's time was important. "You think you can scare me?" I said, not yelling anymore because I knew he was close. "You're boring." I didn't know anything about fighting back or protecting myself, but I knew that nothing surprised me. I might not win, but I wouldn't scream. Dashing back into the biology lab, I reached around the doorframe to grab the receiver I'd left dangling, but I only caught air. Patting the wall, I searched for the phone and looked up, seeing the receiver and its cord gone. What? My heart skipped a beat. I just had it in my hand. I quickly scanned the room, knowing someone was in here. I tried to spot them in one of the darkened corners, or their eyes peeking through one of the bookshelves. Maybe Michael Crist's red mask, Kai Mori's broad shoulders, Damon Torrance's stupid smirk, or Will Grayson's black hoodie. But I wasn't waiting around. Leaving, I ran back toward the teacher's lounge and darted into the girls' bathroom, hopping up onto the radiator and unlatching the window. Flipping it up, I hung my arms over the side and stuck my head out. I tried to lift myself up, my legs flailing, as I tried to get some traction against the wall to push myself up more, but my back ached, and the muscles in my stomach burned as I struggled. If my spaghetti arms could lift more than a blueberry, that would be fantastic. God, I was pathetic. I grunted, using every ounce of strength to pull myself up, but I heard something and stopped. Looking over the gym roof, I saw Michael Crist on the outdoor basketball court, dribbling a ball and shooting baskets in the rain. He was outside. He wasn't inside. Were they all outside? If it wasn't the horseman up here with me, freaking me out, then who? The bathroom door suddenly whined behind me, and I didn't know if someone was leaving or coming in, but I scrambled, hopping down off the radiator and whipping around to face whoever it was. The door swung closed, no one in front of me. But then a click pierced the silence, and my eyes flashed to the stall door, the closed one. Someone was in here. Someone's... I couldn't swallow. If it wasn't Will and his pals, then that changed things. Running past the stall, I threw open the door and dashed into the hallway, making my way for the chemistry lab. It had a window like the bio lab, and I could crawl out onto the roof, flail, scream for help, whatever. I was safer in the open than stuck up here with God knows who. Laughter broke out from somewhere, echoing down the hall, and I noticed more wet tracks on the floor, some leading back to the bathroom where I was, and some moving alongside me. Tossing a look over my shoulder, I saw a dark shadow moving through the glass in the other hallway and the door to the bathroom swing open, another figure emerging. My stomach rolled. What the hell? Racing into the chem lab, I closed the door, locked it, and pulled the shade down on the window. Rain fell all around, pummeling the roof and tapping the windows, but I heard it louder in here. I narrowed my eyes. It was loud, just like in the bio lab. Looking over my shoulder, I saw that one of the windows was open in here, too, rain bouncing against the roof outside and drenching the countertop along the wall. I dropped my eyes to the floor, my heart sinking as I saw more wet footprints. Only this time, they weren't leaving the room. Following the trail around the desks, I walked toward the back of the room and stopped as they disappeared into the dark corner. I tried to inhale a breath, but I couldn't stop shaking. Grabbing a pair of tongs off the tray on the table, I kept them in my fist before picking up a flask, rearing back, and launching it into the corner. It shattered against the bookshelf, missing the corner by a mile, because I suck, and I picked up a beaker next, throwing it at him, whoever it was, and hitting the wall this time. I kept going, picking up a cylinder and loading my arm, but then he stepped out. His dark form somehow much bigger than I was expecting. I took a step back but released a breath, looking up. Jeans, black hoodie, and a white paintball mask with a red stripe down the left side. Will. I almost relaxed, until I dropped my eyes and noticed the gloves. Black leather. He balled his fists, making them grind and whine as he stretched the material that glinted in the moonlight. I glanced at the door. But it was no use. Kai and Damon, I assumed, were out there somewhere still. I glared at Will as he took a slow step toward me. I'm not scared, I told him. He cocked his head. I'm annoyed. I clenched my weapons in my hands. I have to walk home in the rain now. I threw the cylinder at him, damn near hitting him, but he whipped out his arm and swatted it away before it hit his face. It crashed to the floor, and I backed away, snatching another flask off a table as he stepped closer. You got a problem with my brother? Then you take it up with him. Don't be a coward. He stalked toward me, and I launched the flask. It hit him in the chest, making him stumble, but it didn't break, tumbling to the floor instead, the glass finally shattering. He walked, the glass cracking under his boots, and I watched as he laid his gloved hand on the black lab table, gliding it over the top as he moved. My heart pounded in my chest, my stomach swirling as a fear took root, and I looked up at his face, his eyes through the little holes in the mask, barely visible in the darkness. I stopped, suddenly lost in those voids for a moment. He took another step, and a jolt hit my heart, my whole body warming. Still, I didn't move. I couldn't. Another step. He was almost at me. Why wasn't I moving? My pulse raced more by the second, and the feeling almost made me smile because I kind of liked it. Something built inside me, stacking one brick on top of another until I was a wall. And every second more that I stood there, the more the room started to spin around us like a storm. And he and I were the eye. What was I doing? What if this wasn't a joke? Just another second. Just one more second. I wanted to push it. With every moment that passed, my lungs worked faster to take in air, and I just wanted him to take another step, one more step, to be closer to me, until he was there, 2 inches from my body and looking down at me. So close that if I spun around to bolt, there was no way I'd get away. My stomach swirled, and my knees shook. I tried to swallow, but I couldn't. Is this the part where I giggle? I said, trying to sound tough but failing. Or beg? He cocked his head to the side again, like he was studying me. I forced a smirk despite my hands shaking with fear. Stop it. You're scaring me, I whimpered, imitating one of his Barbie dolls. Oh, no. Whatever will I do? Don't be too hard on me, Daddy. I bat my eyelashes. But I admit I like it when you're hard on me. So hard. And then I moaned for good measure. Then I dropped the smirk and cocked an eyebrow. Is that what he expected from me? You don't scare me, I repeated. Shooting out my hand, I grabbed a set of test tubes and reared my arm back, throwing them through one of the windows. I growled as it crashed through, all the glass hopefully falling on top of the skylight of the gym below and alerting someone I was up here. The sound of rain filled the room even more, and cool air rushed in, the wind blowing my hair. I looked up, glaring into his eyes, hoping that did it and he'd stop now. But he just stared down at me. And then, as if accepting a challenge, he reached out and swiped an entire stand of beakers, flasks, and funnels off the countertop and onto the floor. The crash ached in my ears, but I didn't flinch. Reaching out, I grabbed hold of another stand and pulled it onto the floor, every empty vial and container shattering between us as I backed away and he advanced. Passing the next student work table, he reached for the left and pulled the chemistry set onto the floor, and I reached right, yanking another between us as he continued walking, the glass crackling under his feet. We moved faster, him reaching left and me reaching to the right, metal stands clanking to the floor between us as glass crashed and filled the room with chaos after chaos. Again, left, right, left, right. We kept going. His getting faster, and me stumbling back to grab the next table stand as something filled up in my stomach, my muscles charged, and I started to smile. He moved into me, then I stumbled back, tripping on my foot and losing my balance. I fell backward, but he followed, his arm circling my waist just in time, as his other grabbed the table for support. I looked over my shoulder, seeing bits of glass on the floor where I would have landed. Turning back to him, I stared up into his eyes as my fingers clutched his shoulders. And then I felt it, the smile still on my face. I was smiling. A little. Shit. Slowly I let it fall, but I couldn't take my eyes off his. Guilt washed over me at the mess we made, knowing I couldn't pay for it. But the worry left as quickly as it came, because all I could feel was the here and now. The rain and wind blew through the room, and I reached up, my hands shaking, as I lifted his mask off his face and dropped it to the floor. He just held me as I slipped the hood off his head and looked up into dark green eyes.
I was never trying to scare you, Will said, rain glistening on his face and wet hair. I just wanted to see something.
I stared at him, because I couldn't speak no matter how hard I tried. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I wanted to go, but I didn't want to leave. I liked this.
But I twisted out of his hold, stumbling backward and landing on my hands away from the glass.
A smile glinted in his eyes, and he dropped to his hands and knees too, watching me with mischief. My heart raced again, hearing the glass crunch under his palms, and I held his eyes, scooting back slowly as he moved toward me.
But just then, he moved with the speed of light, barreling right at me, and I yelped as I leapt to my feet, and so did he. But before I could run, he crashed into me and pinned me to the wall.
I exhaled hard, trying to keep the smile off my face, but I couldn't help the small laugh that escaped. My heart was beating so fast.
His body pressed into me, and I could feel his eyes on me as he tipped his chin down, his nose nearly brushing mine.
Get away from me, I stammered, because I was trying not to laugh.
A drop of sweat trickled down my back, his body on mine, making it too unbearable to even breathe.
He took my chin in his hand and lifted it up, trying to get me to look at him. His heat surrounded me, and the pulse between my thighs throbbed. I didn't want him to go anywhere, and I hated that. Blinking long and hard, I swallowed the lump in my throat and looked up into his eyes, hardening my gaze.
You're all assholes, I said, grabbing his wrist. Boring and predictable. And maybe that shit works on everyone else, but not me.
I yanked his fingers off my chin and shoved him in the chest, stepping away.
He didn't want me. He wanted to use me. And no matter how much I wanted to indulge a fantasy of fun and excitement, I'd be the one to pay later. Not him. Getting me into bed so he could get laughs when he told everyone what a lousy lay I was, or rub it in my brother's face that he'd gotten me to spread my legs, were the only things he was interested in. No, he wasn't going to win.
Unlock the doors, I told him.
But he just stared at me for a moment, and instead of heading to the hallway and toward the stairwell doors that had been locked, he walked for the wall of windows. The wind and rain barely staying at bay beyond the broken glass.
Unlock the doors, I said again, walking over to his side.
Why? He asked. I scowled.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
I wasn't trying to scare you, he said,
staring out at the rain pummeling the roof.
But why wasn't I?
Real monsters don't wear masks, William Grayson III, I retorted. They look like everyone else.
He kept staring at the rain, but he didn't respond.
Now unlock the doors.
I turned around.
You're pathetic, and you've wasted my time.
I walked for the classroom door, but then I heard his voice behind me.
They won't let you walk home in this weather, he said.
They can't stop me.
I won't let you walk home in this, he clarified. You'll sleep here tonight.
I glanced over my shoulder at him, placing my hand on the door handle.
Make me.
But before I could even turn the doorknob, he reached into his pocket and pulled out his phone, tapping the screen.
Stop it! You're scaring me, I said on the recording. Whatever will I do? Don't be too hard on me, Daddy.
I stopped breathing for a moment, every muscle in my body losing strength.
My hand dropped from the knob. But I admit, I like it when you're hard on me. So hard.
I closed my eyes, hearing myself moan on the phone.
Shit!
I turned around, meeting his self-satisfied little smile and knowing he'd recorded his prank. They always documented their dumb crap on that stupid phone. I almost walked out. My feet almost took that step, and they could post that online for everyone to have a good laugh. My brother would get angry. Because his mind would make up whatever story was the easiest to go along with what he thought was happening in that recording, too. No skin off my nose because I was used to it.
But then Will said, "Door's unlocked. Go get some pizza."
And he picked up his mask off the floor.
"We'll clean up here."
I hesitated, looking around at all the broken glass and how much trouble I'd be in if my brother found out I'd helped make this mess. Even though I was kind of defending myself,
I still didn't want him to have any idea of what happened up here, because he'd just blame me. I blinked long and hard. Fine. I walked out, charging down the hallway and through the doors to the stairwell. I should be at home. I should be with my grandma. He just wanted to play with me to prove he could. But a night away was rare. At least I could relax, knowing Martin wouldn't be here. I had my earbuds and a book. I still wasn't giving Will another inch tonight, though. The lock-in was filled with witnesses. Let him try. I kicked rocks all the way back down to the gymnasium, ignored the pizza, and planted my butt on the bleachers. Opening my phone, I tapped the app and tried to continue reading The Night Eternal as the music and activity went on around me. But after 10 minutes, I'd barely absorbed a paragraph. And when he and his friends finally came back downstairs, I forgot about the book as I waited for him to come over and try something. Engage me, annoy me, tease me. But he didn't. He left me alone. I faltered for a moment, a little confused. I expected him to try to piss me off or coerce me into the scavenger hunt they were having or something. But he just left me sitting there, the minute stretching into an hour, and the hour stretching into two. Just as I thought, to prove he could. The band director called my brother and asked if I could put in more work-study hours by helping in the kitchen tonight. Then they'd keep me over since it would be too late to go home. Martin was probably fine with it since I was working, but I didn't for 1 second think the director came up with that lie herself. Because I didn't help in the kitchen at all. I just sat there, trying to read on my phone. Will glanced over every once in a while as he spent time with his friends, or slow danced with some girl to make sure I was where he'd left me. He just liked making me sweat. That's what this was about. Control. Before I knew it, the lights were dimming, and Will was shoving me toward his sleeping bag smack dab in the middle of Michael, Kai, and Damon. I groaned. Did I really have to be here?
Take it.
He pushed me again, and I stumbled.
I'm warm enough without it.
Like I care about your comfort. Seriously. He laid down on the mat next to his sleeping bag, black with red and black checkered lining, and I stood there, scowling. Keeping my shoes on, I climbed inside the sleeping bag, seeing Christ on my right, Torrance lying at my feet, and Kai above me. Michael pulled off his T-shirt, his long, toned torso, spread out next to me, like he didn't know we were still in public, no matter where we were sleeping. I quickly turned away, heat rising to my cheeks. I scooted up toward Kai, the safe one, but something grabbed my feet and yanked my ass back down. I glared at Will, but he just smiled to himself as the lights in the gym went off and everyone settled in, giggles piercing the air and chaperones patrolling to keep people's hands off each other. Yes, let's lock up over 100 hormonal teenagers in one space. What a stupid idea. My stomach growled, and I shot a glance up at Will, seeing his eyes closed, his arm propped up under his head as a pillow, and his lips curled with a smile. He'd heard that. Someone brought me pizza earlier as I sat on the bleachers, maybe at Will's behest, but I told him to screw off. Now I regretted it. I hadn't eaten in over 24 hours. The minutes passed, the chatter started to quiet, and Bryce started to snore from the other side of the gym. Arian Ashby slipped on her sleep mask, and some students put on their expensive headphones to cancel out the noise. I was too hungry to sleep, and the granola bar in my pocket called to me. I turned my head, looking over at Will. His hair had dried, and even though I'd never seen it looking so messy, he still pulled it off, because he was born with it. Stern brown eyebrows, a sharp nose, but soft lips, and the most beautiful eyes I'd ever seen behind those sweet, sleeping eyelids and long lashes. Why couldn't guys this cute ever be nice? I blinked, dropping my gaze. Of course, he did give me his sleeping bag, and probably the granola bar and Godzilla, too, even though he broke into my locker to leave it for me. So, what were you trying to do? I asked in a low voice.
When?
I looked up to see his eyes still closed. You said you weren't trying to scare me upstairs, I told him. So what were you trying to do? His chest rose and fell in steady breaths, hesitating a moment.
I was trying to see if you liked it, he whispered.
If I liked what? Him? The chase? The danger? The risk? Well, I didn't. But I couldn't help but ask, "And? What conclusion did you come to?" The corner of his mouth curled into a smile, but he didn't open his eyes, and he didn't answer.
"Go to sleep."
I turned my eyes back up to the ceiling, seeing the rain still hitting the skylight. He needed to leave me alone. Just give up. If he kept pushing me, I'd do something stupid because I could feel it coming. I clenched the sleeping bag in my fingers. There were moments I wanted to do something outrageous. I mean, sure, I wanted a boyfriend. I wanted fun. But I couldn't bring someone into my life. It was a nightmare, and I needed to keep it together for my grandma. Just mess with someone else, Will Grayson. I don't want your attention. Unable to stop myself, I turned my head again, taking in the peaceful look on his face as he slept. The way his neck looked so smooth and soft, and what would have happened upstairs in the chem lab if I hadn't pushed him away. I would have regretted it, but I would have liked it, I think. I stared at his lashes and the way they draped over his skin underneath his eyes. My own burned with tears I refused to let loose. I guess I understood people letting themselves be used, even for just a night, if it meant not being alone for once. I turned over on my side, watching him sleep, but then my eye caught something, and I looked down, seeing Damon lying on his stomach and watching me. His head was propped on his hand, his eyes sharp, as he brought up his fingers and dragged his thumb across his throat, not blinking once as he stared at me. I clenched the sleeping bag tighter at the small scowl in his eyes. Rolling over, I stared at the ceiling again, getting the message. "You're not special, so don't get confused, girl." I reached into my pocket and fisted the granola bar. But I was no longer hungry.
Chapter 5. Will. Present. I stared at her through the two-way mirror as she stood on the other side, moving her gaze left, right, up and down, taking in Iden's bedroom. Noticing the bathroom, she hurried through the door and turned on the faucet, filling up a glass with water. She tipped her head back, gulped down the whole thing, and refilled again, drinking that as well. I finally blinked, balling my fists as I watched her in her tight, cropped black pants, and her sweet little fitted white blouse with the collar buttoned right up to the neck. She might look like the grown-up architect she was if it weren't for the white Adidas sneakers instead of heels. Amusement curled the corners of my lips, remembering overhearing her words in class once. "It doesn't matter if I arrive in style if I can't arrive at all." She hadn't changed a bit. Why the fuck was she here? I let my eyes fall down her body, knowing she couldn't see me as I took in her dark hair, kinky and wild from the tumble. The heat on her cheeks, rosy against her golden skin, was still so beautiful, and I'd bet her slender neck could still fit in my hand. My mouth watered, and my cock started to swell. Coming back in the room, she carried a newly filled glass of water and set it down on the chest of drawers before walking around the room. Mud smeared her clothes, and a leaf stuck in her hair as she wrung her hands. Micah and Rory dumped her in here an hour ago, while Iden and Taylor went off somewhere. Iden would be back, though. I looked over at his bed, the largest in the house, with his fresh white sheets and luxurious feather-down comforter. Walking over, she lifted the pillow to her nose and inhaled his scent. I narrowed my eyes, a knot tightening in my gut. She pulled back and then dove back in, drawing him in again. I clenched my teeth. She dropped the pillow to the bed and continued around the room, opening drawers and closets, sifting through the medical notes and drawings on his desk, and leaned down to inspect the jars of dead animals floating in formaldehyde. Then, she picked up one of the bones strewn on his desk and lifted it up, turning it over. She hissed, realizing what it was, and threw it back onto the table. I smiled. She took out the knife Iden let her keep and gripped it in her fist before she downed another glass of water and then walked to the locked door, yanking on it. It didn't give, though. What did she think she was going to do? What was I going to do? She was on my agenda, but not yet. This changed things. She paced and paced, breathing heavier and getting worked up, but then she stopped. And she looked over at me. I cocked my head as she thinned her eyes and stepped slowly over to the mirror on her wall, stopping directly in front of it. The square mirror was about 3 feet on all sides, and she seemed to look through it, but her eyes never really found mine. She couldn't see me, but she clearly knew it was more than a mirror. You could never get much over on her. She peered around the edges of the mirror, trying to take it off the wall or pry it away enough to see behind, and I stepped closer until I couldn't step any more. Standing up straight, she held out her index finger and touched her nail to the surface, leaning close to see if the reflection touched the tip. A little test to determine if a mirror was two-way or not. The corner of my mouth curled up in a grin. Her chest caved, and she froze. Uh-oh. She stayed there a moment, and then she rose up and stared through the glass, searching for whoever was watching her. I raised my fingers to the mirror, less than a foot from her face, as I stared into her stunning eyes. I swallowed the bitter taste in my mouth. 9 years. 9 years, and I still wanted to fuck her. Only now, I wouldn't give her sweet and gentle. Shit had changed.
You have to take, she said, staring through the mirror.
I trained my ears, listening.
Because you're too weak to know how to win what you want. That's why you're in here.
She backed away and then shot out her foot, kicking the glass with a snarl on her face. I stared.
Come on, Will, she begged. Stop the waiting and come on.
She kicked the glass again and again, baring her teeth, and I almost smiled again, remembering that night in the lab. How she challenged us, so ready to face danger. So tough, so cocky. I liked stubborn. I liked women who took control. But then she spoke up again, inhaling hard and shallow.
It's not my fault, she bit out. It's not my fault that you wrapped your entire happiness up in some delusion you'd cooked up in your head where I loved you and life would be right as rain if we were together.
My amusement fell, and I flexed my jaw.
I did what I had to do, and I'd do it again, she growled, her voice cracking. I'd do it again.
She gasped for breath and closed her eyes, dropping her forehead into the mirror and punching the glass.
I'd do it again, she choked out, her voice thick with tears.
I moved my palm to hers, staring down at her, centimeters away as I rubbed her cheek with my thumb. No worries, baby, I murmured. I intend to deserve it this time. Excitement fluttered through my stomach, and I curled my fist, almost feeling her in it. A knock sounded on the door, and it opened wide, Iden entering and carrying a plate. My heart hammered, and I watched as he stopped and looked at her, his golden brown eyes dark with mischief. Are you hungry? He asked her. She shot her head up and whipped around like she hadn't heard him knock. Unsheathing the knife, she held it tightly at her side, backing up to put more distance between him and her. He set the plate and silverware down and looked up at her as he slipped his hands into his pockets. I said I wouldn't hurt you.
I don't remember you saying that.
No? He smiled. Well, I meant to. He said no one would touch her. They weren't synonymous, I'd learned here. He gazed at her,
and I folded my arms over my chest, watching him watch her and waiting for any movement. But he simply drew in a deep breath and turned around. "Eat," he said, walking to the door. "And bathe. You're filthy." He pointed to the white porcelain tub in the corner of the room. "Or I'll bathe you," he warned over his shoulder. "And there's five of me to hold you down." He closed the door, locking it, and she stood there for a moment, glancing from the door to me and back to the door again. Taking the chair at the desk, she fit it underneath the door handle as if that would keep us out, and then she walked over, lifting the plate up to her face. She sniffed the pasta. He wouldn't poison her food. What fun would that be? He was just getting started with her. I closed my eyes, turning away. I clenched the window frame on both sides, staring out into the vast, silent night high above the rest of the house. Michael. They'd sent her here. I knew it. But why? To motivate me? It had to be them, and if they could get someone in, why not one of them? I had my plans for her, but there were bigger things at play right now, and it wasn't the time. Fuck. I squeezed the frame, hearing the wood crack in my fist. Did they know what she did? They would have had to in order for Rika, Banks, and Winter to be on board with this. It was kind of cool, I guess. I figured they'd find me, and never doubted they'd look, at least, even if it did take them forever. Unfortunately, none of it was necessary. I knew exactly what I was doing, and even though it pissed me off, I couldn't blame them for doubting that I was in control. The stairs creaked, and I heard a voice behind me as someone entered my room. "Can you finish it?" Iden asked. I glanced over my shoulder, seeing him stand at the top of the stairs leading into my attic room. He walked over, carrying his shirt in his hand and holding my eyes like a snake. Always like a snake, coiled for the kill, and when it struck, you didn't even know what had happened until it was over. I nodded, pulling off my t-shirt and tossing it on my bed. I grabbed my kit and joined him at the leather bench I had sitting against the wall. Setting his shirt down, he laid on the bench and tucked the other arm under his head as I poured the rest of the black ink I'd siphoned into a small dish. I sat down and picked up the needles I'd tied to a pencil and dipped it in the ink. I approached him, leaning down to his right shoulder. "So, what should I do with her?" he asked. I faltered for a moment, but then pressed the three-needle tool into him, breaking the skin as the ink seeped immediately into the wound. I didn't answer, because I knew better than to answer. "You didn't help her," he mused, unfazed by the pain. "She clearly expected you to." I pressed again and again, redipping the needles into the ink every few moments as I tattooed the final line and colored it in. His chest rose and fell in steady breaths, not missing a beat. I had some professional ink on my body, but a lot of mine was homemade like this, and I knew well it hurt. Like Damon, though, it was the pain or it was nothing with Iden. "She's a fighter," he said. He gazed up at the vaulted ceiling of my little hideaway that I'd moved into after my first night here. The white rooms and white rugs and white everything chilled me downstairs. I wanted my space, and I wanted it dark. Plus, the windows opened up onto the roof up here. I liked the view. "I love that about her," he continued. "As long as she doesn't hang herself with what little rope that I'm giving her. Did you notice that?" He looked at me. "It was like she didn't actually realize the gravity of her situation. Trapped, with no way to survive if she leaves, And with 5 men who want to have the kind of fun we've been deprived of for so long, that a simple matter of money can make go away if she complains. I clenched my teeth, pressing the needles in hard. His muscle jerked under my hand, but still he stayed fixed on me. "What was her name again?" he asked softly. "Emery?" My arms burned until I realized every muscle in my body was tensed. I forced the lump down my throat. "Those eyes," he murmured, "brown with flecks of gold. They're beautiful. I wonder what they look like staring down at you in the heat of it." I stared so hard at his shoulder and the design he'd instructed I tattoo that I was surprised his skin didn't catch fire. "How do I make her come?" he asked, watching me. I tightened my hold on the instrument. "Some women need a thumb on the clit when you're inside them, you know?" he taunted. "Does she like men to do that to her?" I gritted my teeth, punching a hole in his skin and hearing the little pop. He hissed under his breath, but then smiled, pleased he'd gotten to me. "Our fathers didn't send us here to learn how to behave, Will. They would enjoy her too, with or without her permission." He paused and then continued. "They sent us here as punishment for not being more mindful of discretion. To learn how to not be sloppy," he explained. "My father didn't send me here. I didn't understand how any father could send his child to a place like this, because one thing would be for certain if they ever got out. Blood isn't love, and love is the only thing that begets loyalty." I looked at Iden, who now stared at the ceiling again. In my time here, I'd figured out Micah, Rory, and even Taylor. But Iden, he'd been here the longest, and by this point, he might have come too far to go back anymore. "When I was 20, I was at a resort wedding," he told me, a faraway look in his eyes. "And I watched one of my father's business associates drug his own wife, lay her down on a bed, and back away as he let my father climb on top of her and fuck her to seal a deal." I paused, something like pain crossing his eyes. But then it was gone. "After a while, you know you'll never escape it," he said. "So you can either keep fighting the ugly, or you can reinvent it." He turned his eyes on me again. "The biggest difference between my father and me is I just didn't care if anyone saw the blood on the walls." I couldn't move for a moment. "Em." I dropped my eyes and finished the design, scratching in the last of the color. "Don't worry," he told me. "I'm nothing like my father, or Taylor, or Damon Torrance. I don't force or coerce." He dropped his voice. "It'll hurt you more if she wants it." Then he reached down, kneading his cock through his pants, and the needles in my hand shook for a moment as the temptation sat there in my gut. I had Micah and Rory. Taylor could be controlled. No one would touch Emery if I ended Iden right here and now. He laid there, watching me and waiting for it, giving me my chance, daring me, but... Finally, he just smiled and sat up, taking a clean cloth from the table and patting the blood off his shoulder. "Everything is part of a bigger plan," he said. "Whether it's God or fate or something else, I honestly believe that, Will." He tossed the cloth and looked at me. "We were always going to be important to each other." I raised my eyes, unable to hide the scowl. He grabbed the back of my neck, giving me his reassuring little pat, and then nodded to the black garbage bags I had sitting close by to wrap up his tattoo. "Finish me up," he said. "It's going to be a night." Chapter 6. Will. 9 years ago. I should have touched her. I took a drag off the cigarette and dumped Damon's lighter back into the cup holder, blowing smoke out the driver's side window. But no, she wouldn't have wanted me to. I rubbed my temple and closed my eyes. She was killing me, had been killing me for years. Real monsters don't wear masks, William Grayson III. A smile pulled at my lips. She was unpredictable, though, wasn't she? I couldn't stop thinking about last night and the lock-in. I took another drag and blew out the smoke as I squeezed the steering wheel under my fist. "Is this pissing you off?" Michael asked next to me, and I could hear the humor in his voice as he relaxed his ass in the passenger side seat of my truck. I looked over, seeing him stare at my white-knuckled fist wrapped around my steering wheel. "Nothing pisses me off," I mumbled, seeing his head tilted back and his eyes hooded. "Except when I drive, it's Damon and me up front," I pointed out. "On the rare occasion you let me drive for the night." "The only reason you're driving is so we can cart the keg to the church," he told me. "If you didn't have a truck, then I might be useless," I finished for him. He laughed. But he didn't argue, did he? "That three-pointer from the wing sure wasn't useless," Kai joked from the back. I shot him a look in my rearview mirror, but his face was buried in some booklet. I shook my head and turned my eyes out the window. I had my talents. At least I was on for the game last night. "About fucking time," Michael grumbled. I blew out a puff of smoke and followed his gaze, seeing Damon finally jog out of the cathedral and across the street. Switching the cigarette to my left hand, I started the engine again. "Get out." Damon opened up the passenger side door and jerked his thumb at Michael. "Now." But Michael just sat there, looking amused. Damon cocked an eyebrow. "I will put you in my lap if you want," he told him.